Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The Jim Crow South offered few safe places for the development of black business investment opportunities. White terrorist violence crushed black entrepreneurship in cities like Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Wilmington, North Carolina. But at least one southern city stands out as an exception, Durham, North Carolina. The so-called Black Wall Street grew in Durham, and black-owned businesses and professions thrived in the first half of the 20th century, allowing for the development of a black middle class. It was fueled in part by the success of North Carolina Mutual Insurance and Mechanics and Farmers Bank, and Black Wall Street invested in their own by providing capital and encouraging entrepreneurship. So as Durham celebrates its 150th anniversary this year, we're going to look at the history of Black Wall Street, what it was, why it worked, and how Durham continues to rebuild the legacy. Right. Talk a little bit about North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. I want to bring another guest into the picture right now with Andrea Harris to talk a little bit about that. Kimberly Moore is a marketing expert who worked for North Carolina Mutual for almost 15 years. Kimberly, welcome to State of Things. Give us the backstory on North Carolina Mutual.
Wow. So the company, 1898, founded by seven gentlemen. The primary founder was a barber. Very inspiring. He had six barbershops in Durham, and he would often be cutting hair, and folks would come to the barbershop, and, you know, he'd pass the hat, right? So he's listening to the woes of the community, looking for dignity in burial. That is really the crux of why the company that now 120 years later began, because of dignity in burial of African Americans. He called six of his friends together and said, you know, there's something here, right? Now, there were other fraternal orders, the Kings of David, the folks that went door-to-door selling insurance and really selling the idea of taking care of orphans and widowers. So that's really the precursor to North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company, the idea that we needed to take care of our own, and the concept of it's not about money, right? It was a mission-driven business from the very beginning. So his six friends heeded the call. They were also, I'm sure, tired of him calling them, right, informally, help me with this, help me with that. So this was really one of the first formal businesses the six of them worked together on. Each of them put in $50. And that started a multi-million dollar business in 1898. After that first claim came through, all but two of the six said, really? We've got to pay this? Wait a minute. I thought we were going to make money. So they asked for their investment back, and the company survived because Dr. Moore, as Andrea mentioned, and John Merrick said, we have to keep this going. So even at the beginning, it was a precarious business. It could have folded. We could have been talking about another business 120 years later. But those two gentlemen doubled down, bought the investment of the other five, and said, okay, we're going to keep it going. Called Dr. Moore's nephew, who was in a store, of course, you know, as a writer. You can see him. He's there sweeping the floor, CeCe Spaulding, the nephew, and they plucked him out of Columbus County And he goes on to be the longest serving president, from sweeping the floor in Columbus County to North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. So that's really the beginning of it, and why it's, I think, so resonant even now.
And this is, I mean, it sounds like nepotism, but the fact is he was so successful in a business that's a tough business anyway.
Oh my God.
And particularly because what you have to do, like in any business, is make more money than you spend, which is what the early investors didn't reckon on, right? You have to make more money than you spend, which means you have to make wise investments. You have to actually play the market and get involved. And also, but if you're cut off from those markets, then you invest in whom? And where? Where does this money get reinvested in order to have the money to pay back?
Literally, we launched McGangs and Farmers Bank. We start one of the early founders who asked for his money back. James Shepherd started North Carolina Central. So truly, the NC Mutual Life Insurance Company family invested back into Black Wall Street, which is, again, why there's so many businesses there, because literally there were no venture capitalists, right? We were the first to do that. Folks would come to us from all over this country looking for loans and advice and investment, seed capital, all those sexy words, you know, that we use now, really started over on Paris Street with North Carolina Mutual. So the double duty dollar, all these public relations and advertising concepts really began because there wasn't a choice, right? We couldn't go to other banks. People were not taking chances on African-American entrepreneurs, except for where you had a concentrated critical mass of successful people. They wanted to see more of that success. So they consciously, they made an effort to grow the street, to grow the businesses on that street.
And it had an even expanded effect, because what you had was, you know, the idea of collecting this money, these small amounts of money that would go into these burial funds, right, this life insurance. Salesmen would go out into the fields, out into rural North Carolina, wearing some very fine suits and collecting, right,
yes,
and collecting
right.
the money.
Yeah.
But this
That's
was, right. talk about the impact of that in rural America.
Literally, at the height, in I would say the mid-50s, North Carolina Mutual had almost 2,000 African-American agents in this country going door to door. I invite you, there's some amazing pictures in our collection that's held by NCCU and Duke of, you know, 300 and 400 sales agents looking back at you. And those pictures are so powerful because, you know, they've looked into the faces of oftentimes farmers, you know, shoeshine gentlemen, women who are domestics, going, picking up 5-10 cents every week. The logbooks, the ledgers are over in our collection. Literally, the shoes that C.C. Spalding wore when he was going door to door in those first 10 years have holes in them are over at the collection. So it's not, you know, some nostalgia. These yeah. gentlemen and men and women, I would say one of our top agents, the first person to make the $1 million round table was a young lady out of Newark, New Jersey. You know, they have real stories of collecting that money door to door.
I'm talking to Kimberly Moore and Andrea Harris right now. Kimberly worked for North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company for almost 15 years. Today, she's the head of marketing at St. Augustine's University. Andrea grew up traveling to Black Wall Street, and she later worked in minority business development at the North Carolina Department of Commerce and co-founded the North Carolina Institute of Minority Economic Development. And joining the conversation now is Henry McCoy, a former Assistant Secretary of Commerce for the state of North Carolina, and right now, the Director of Entrepreneurship at North Carolina Central University School of Business. Henry McCoy, welcome to the State of What about the relationship between black and white communities here? As you say, it was not good in the South, particularly at that time. This is where the anxieties and really the birth of white supremacy is starting to make a surge at this moment. What's happening in Durham in this time?
Well, it was interesting. You know, as you stated earlier, you have this kind of this kind of dichotomy of both this black community that's growing as a middle class, but you also still have white racism. I feel like that the Duke family probably deserved a lot of credit for probably keeping some of the racial tension down. But, you know, we don't want to make it into something that it was not. I mean, it was still the South, right. I mean, it was still challenges. And so, for example, you hear the story about when North Carolina Mutual built this building in downtown Durham. It ultimately had built the largest building in downtown Durham, and then it got burned down. And so when they rebuilt the building, they made sure that it was not the tallest building in downtown anymore.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, June 7, 2019, so I have been told. This is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Dial in if you have, hopefully, codified suggestions. We always, always appreciate victims of racism, non-white people who have figured out these are some things that work. You know, I've been on a job, or at least on my job. If you figured out some strategy, at least one strategy, one thing that can be helpful, if it's going to get time off, if you figured out, hey, if you do it this way, get your paperwork in this time, email notification, whatever it is that seems to minimize the likelihood of people saying that they forgot after they already approved something, that sort of thing. Anything that you have found out that is helpful in minimizing problems with white people, non-white people on the job. They don't mess over your schedule. You don't come in on a Monday morning where your normal routine has been. You're scheduled to be in at 7 a.m. Then you come in on Tuesday and they say, oh, no, we've flipped your schedule around. Now you're going to be starting at 11 p.m. and working until 7 a.m. You don't get those types of wacky adjustments in your schedule. You get your raises. You get your promotions. No problem. You have a whole personal folder of sparkling reviews and performance evaluations. Please dial in. Share with us. How were you able to accomplish that? Help us emulate what you have done. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. This is not a broadcast for spectators. Again, the number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. There were a bevy of things this week that dealt with workplace racism and black people, violence and workplace racism. I had even a whole nother sound clip. I had so many sound clips. I don't remember too many times for workplace racism where I could have just played about an hour of workplace racism sound clips. And most of them were workplace racism and violence. That is the system of racism, white supremacy. And if nothing else, I think we've had so many times we've had male callers. We've had female callers who've dialed in and talked about where things got so bad, they had to call the enforcement officials. Stacy in the UK, she's with us on a regular basis with us this evening. She's talked about situations where she was assaulted at work and was, I need to file a police report. Even being assaulted by other non-white people. Stacy in the UK talked about that. We've had other callers talk about that. Take any instance where you feel unsafe, and safety, that is such an important concept in the workplace. If things happen, even if you have not been physically violated, if you don't feel safe, use that term. This is a violent, not I feel bad, not this was racially insensitive, not I have a gripe, not I want to file a complaint. I want to report unsafe work conditions. Any work environment where somebody reports, oh, I'd like to report unsafe work conditions, everybody, it should be screeching halt, like, whoa, unsafe work conditions? What's going on? What's more important? What's the problem? That's it. What is the problem? And let's get this addressed immediately. And if you're in a work environment where anyone says, oh, there's a safety issue, and got more important things to do, basketball game tonight, Cheetos in the snack machine. They got other things that they're worried about. That lets you know I'm in a very dangerous environment and you should be getting that resume LinkedIn page updated immediately. I've said before, you have to be the person, you take your safety the most serious in the workplace. But before getting to the workplace safety, and as I said, there's so many instances of workplace racism, the sound clip that we started with this week, UNC or North Carolina Public Radio, That is just a snippet of about a 40-minute segment that they had on Durham, North Carolina, specifically in the history of black businesses in that area. I found it interesting, some illustrations of black self-respect. North Carolina Mutual, them talking about them starting a insurance business to take care of their own. Seeming even a long time ago, way back when, 19th century. Concluding, hey, I don't think whites in the great Carolina state are going to be much helpful. This is Ben Tillman's era. I don't think they're going to be helpful. So we'll look out for each other. And even some of the difficulties they talked about. You start out and, oh, wow, you know, we got to, I don't know if we want to do this. We want our money back. It's going to be difficult in a system of racism, white supremacy. Obstacle, no problem. They overcome that. I also appreciated more information about the system of racism, white supremacy. They build this, their office, and it happens to be the tallest office in town. Terrorism. And they use the word terrorism in the clip, unlike James Lowen in Sundown Towns, using the word terrorism. White supremacy as well in the audio clip. Not that I don't think WUNC practices racism, white supremacy, and Frank Stacio, the host, white man specifically, even Dr. Kanban has talked about that, but I do at least recognize word usage. We didn't get that nonsense, white privilege, prejudice, discrimination, race relations. But these are the challenges, even though it might not necessarily be race soldiers coming to burn down your business. In 2019, almost 2020, it will still be various forms of white supremacy, racism. And I had other illustrations of black employees having difficult times with racism on the job, but how many audio segments can you play? That's why I talk about on a regular basis, just because you are a black entrepreneur, don't think that that will solve your problems with racism. It will just change how you are being impacted by racism. There are even examples, 21st century, of black entrepreneurs and whites being upset and coming to terrorize their business, the actual structure. That is a pretty regular thing. Even I think some of the exact same details happened in Wilmington, North Carolina, when they had the terrorist attack there, 1898, if my memory serves correctly. Anyway, some of the other reports, I can't go into detail with everything. Certainly the Virginia shooting, I have a report that I do want to share with regards to that. Just quickly. I mentioned previously about the NBA Finals, which I think game whichever is today. I mentioned Drake, entertainer, victim of racism, who does have a white parent. And I was saying that there were so many instances where people were encouraging and suggesting violence against this non-white male entertainer. Just not that he hit someone. He didn't call someone nasty names other than just yelling at the basketball game. But I mean, he didn't break any laws, you know, wasn't cursing and smuggling narcotics across the border from Canada into the States. Just cheering at a basketball game, which is his job. I reminded folks again, that was why I mentioned all of this to begin with. He is employed by the Toronto Raptors as a brand ambassador. That's his job, to go and cheer for the basketball team. And I was saying all of these instances where white people and non-white people have been coming on television for about 2 weeks now and encouraging violence against this victim of racism. And I said, that's not something that should be taken. That is not something to laugh at. That's not something to minimize. That this is just standard operating procedure, and just finding different ways to suggest and joke about, encourage violence against black people. 1 week later, we're still in the NBA Finals. Drake's team, the Toronto Raptors, they're on the road in Golden State, Oakland. Former resident of the Bay Area myself, they're playing, and one of the owners, one of the co-owners, investors of the Golden State Warriors, Mark Stevens, basketball player, black Kyle Lowry, he's a black basketball player for the Raptors. He falls into the stands chasing a basketball. This sort of thing happens all the time. It's why people are willing to pay thousands of dollars to be in the front row. And, you know, you can be right there and have a sweaty black guy rub all on you. So Kyle Lowry chases this ball into the front row. And he doesn't even touch this white man, Mark Stevens. It's not like he's in his lap or anything, but it's right next to him. And so Kyle Lowry, he doesn't, you know, try to grope a white woman while he's there. He tries to get the ball. He misses, and he's going to get up and go back to playing. This white man, Mark Stevens, co-investor in the Warriors, reaches over and shoves, assaults Mr. Lowry right on television. They got this on camera in the middle of the game. Mr. Lowry, to his credit, he doesn't, you know, two-piece Mr. Stevens, doesn't put him in a headlock, box his ears, beat him down, savage blackmail. He doesn't do any of that. He points to the white official. This man just assaulted me and cursed at him, apparently. He reported that, you know, he yelled some obscenities at him as well, which I'm not surprised. I was a tad surprised he didn't report being called nigger, but he does all this. The NBA, they fine Mr. Stevens $500,000, which is probably nothing, and they ban him for a year. He's been banned for the rest of the finals, and they banned him from attending games for 1 year. Mr. Lowry thought it should have been a lifetime ban for assault. I think there should be police charges myself. I mean, I don't know. You go outside and start just shoving people, probably call, you know, enforcement officials, try out their new taser and chokehold. What is it? Vascular restraint on you. You go out and start shoving people, especially if you're a black male. But I bring this up as workplace racism because, I mean, Mr. Lowry, that is his professional job. He is a professional basketball player. Basketball court is his workplace. We say on a regular basis, your composure, that's the most important thing. I thought this was especially significant because, I mean, it's one thing to say to keep your composure if someone is going to call you a nigger or any other name, coon, whatever it is, and the variety of things that are done to us in the workplace and beyond. But for it to be an actual physical violation and to still keep your composure, process things, pick out the best way that's going to work out for you, in a system of racism, that can be very difficult to do. And just wow for Mr. Lowry. I'm sorry he had to endure that. But I mean, just think about that. That's not even counting your work environment. People are yelling at you, drunk, intoxicated whites are yelling at you and cursing at you and physically assaulting you. They had Russell Westbrook said the fan was basically calling him a slave earlier at the game this year. Like, what sort of counter-racist code do you need to work in that environment? Regardless of, you know, what the compensation is going to be. Violence in the workplace, number two. So the Virginia shooting last week, Virginia Beach, 12 people dead at the facility. Dwayne Craddock, black male, is the alleged shooter in the incident. They say the enforcement officials shot him at the scene. He died from those injuries. That's what's been reported thus far. I've seen very few photographs of Mr. Craddock, and I even heard one report where the authorities said they were going to say his name one time, and that was it. I've seen very little information on this male, why this event happened. It's been a week, and I still feel pretty uninformed, and I've been looking for information about all this regularly. This is one report that I found from the New York Post. I don't think this is a reputable source, the New York Post, owned by Rupert Murdoch, and I have not been able to triangulate this information, meaning I've been listening to news reports, I've been reading news reports from a lot of different sources. This is the only site I've seen that has any mention of some sort of violence or problems in the workplace. I've read other reports, and I've not seen anything like that, but it's there. You can check it out. I posted it online. So this is from the New York Post. The report's titled, Dwayne Craddock was violent with coworkers before Virginia Beach shooting. And this was published on June 2nd. That also I find suspicious because this is last week that this was reported. Or I meant June 2nd. That's Sunday. So top of the week, basically. Last week, basically. Sunday, June 2nd. It's Friday, June 7th. For that much time to have passed, almost a full week, and a black male is the alleged shooter where 12 people are dead, and he killed quite a few white people in a government office building in Virginia Beach. And if this person had a history of violence in the workplace, do you all think that no other news outlets would have reported that in a week's time? I find that hard to believe. The report reads the gunman, who shot 12 people dead at Virginia Beach Municipal Building, had been facing disciplinary actions for a violent fight at work, according to a report. Dwayne Craddock, 40, was still employed as an engineer with the Department of Public Utilities when he went on a shooting rampage Friday, killing 12 and injuring several others, including a cop. But he recently started showing serious behavioral problems and got into physical scuffles with other city workers, a source told the New York Times. We'll read that one too. The source told the paper that troubles had escalated in the week leading up to the mass shooting and that Craddock was involved in what it called a violent altercation on city grounds. Craddock reportedly knew he was facing disciplinary action for the fight when he went into the municipal building with two 45 caliber handguns, at least one which was equipped with a sound suppressor and both which were purchased legally. Craddock killed 12 people, all but one co-workers, and injured several others before he died in a police shootout. He launched the attack after brushing his teeth and sharing pleasantries with a fellow engineer. As I said, I have not seen, read, heard other information corroborating, and they don't have a lot of it. I mean, the report gives like a few other little details just about his family and the note that they have on the residence, but it's no additional details about these alleged fights. Brawls, as I said, I just find it hard to believe that this wouldn't have been reported in other outlets. And that also seems at minimum strange. If you've had a physical altercation at work, and especially if this is some sort of state government job, that sort of thing, you generally don't just get to come in, give in 2 weeks resignation, and that's it. It generally would be, wait a minute. We're going to put you on leave. There's going to be a hearing. You might not be allowed in the building. Maybe we're going to take your badge and everything until we sort all of this out. I mean, if it's violent, they were saying repeated incidents, unless I read this incorrectly, where he was having problems with employees. Like, I don't know. That sort of thing tends to be pretty serious. I find it hard to believe. If other folks have read about this, corroborating information. I'm thousands of miles from the state of Virginia, so if there are any folks who are closer to that area and you've got better information, please share. I do think this is related to workplace racism. And again, I can only encourage if you are in a workplace situation. I don't know if this is accurate. I don't know if he had a history of altercations or anything like that. Who knows? Still learning. I can only say if you're in a workplace situation, try as best you can to just take things seriously and be mindful. We've had people call in who said that they have people that they work with who bring in gun magazines and openly talk about their love of gun ownership, speak in such a way as though it suggests that they may even have guns on their person. I have talked to black people who work with white people who do bring firearms into the workplace and have bragged about their concealed carry permits. If you work and have anyone like that in your work environment, I would be very mindful. If they're making any sort of threats, you see a change in their behavior, take all of that seriously. The same thing that I said before, you have to be the person that takes your safety most serious in the workplace. And if it seems like something is awry, take notes, make reports, do what you need to do to make sure that you are safe. Function as though no one is going to be as concerned about your safety as you are. You're going to have to be the one that makes that a priority. Let me know if you have additional information on Mr. Craddock as it relates to the workplace and alleged incidents of violence in the workplace. If you are, I guess, not feeling comfortable to dial in a share, if you have thoughts, problems, if you figured out some codification in the workplace, if you don't feel comfortable dialing in or not able to dial in live, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your commentary on the air anonymously if you have concerns, you know, about your voice or anything like that. If you have suggestions on what's been shared or your own situation. Some of the folks who dialed in already. First one, this black female victim of racism. She writes, okay. A few weeks ago, I wrote about my workplace giving employees pink papers for when they call out. I can confirm that only the two black employees, myself included, and my non-black, non-white coworker have received the pink papers. None of my white coworkers who call out get those papers because I asked and they did not know what it was. I also check their desk the day they come back from a call out and no pink papers. I did send an email asking questions in a subtle way on why only certain employees get the pink papers. I'm still waiting on a response. That is important as well. And I hope that you... Oh, she said she sent an email. Fantastic. That is, even if they don't respond, that is a response, and you have an electronic record right there. I think so many folks have encouraged that over the years. If you are asking questions and not getting responses, not getting answers, go ahead and begin making an electronic record where you're doing email. That way you can document, I tried to get constructive information, and I was not getting answered. It seemed like this was not a priority in replying to my queries. Very important. And this sort of lack of uniform enforcement of policy and procedure, super important. This happens on a regular basis. Again, this is why Neely Fuller Jr., he talks about the Constitution, equal protection under the law. Meaning that it's supposed, and I've talked about this sort of thing exactly with calling out or coming in late, that they will exercise discretion where some people, you come in 5 minutes late, you get that write up. Pink piece of paper will be there. Other people, you can call out, you can take that sick day. Things are not enforced. That can be, and especially if you can get information from others, if you have that rapport where you can ask other folks, hey, Helen, she's white. You were out yesterday. Are you feeling better? Oh, that's great. Okay. Good to see you back again. Did you get a pink slip for your day out? You know, they got the pink policy. She says, what pink slip? Oh, you didn't get one, you know? Oh, okay. No problem. Well, it's just great that you're back in. Glad to see you again. Hope you enjoy your day. We'll talk soon. And you move along. And I recommend regularly having your workplace journal, record that information. Helen was out on such and such and such and such a date, inquired. She said she didn't get a pink slip. Is that true? That can be verified. Yes or no? Did she get one? Wasn't on our desk. You don't have to reveal that, but you asked directly. She said she didn't get one. If you have that rapport with others, ask. That way you can just add data. Other people's, it's other employees. They can miss a day. They do. Is it uniform? Is this what happens every time? And if not, why? What are, you know, the situations, the circumstances where you can be out and you don't necessarily get a pink slip? All of that's extra data, and all of that would go into policy and procedure, because ideally all of that information would be in the policy and procedure so that you know everything you need to know about this policy. There are no surprises moving forward, and then it's enforced correctly. Continuing, also a few weeks ago, I wrote about how I was demoted to the contact center and my white female manager, who is married to a black male, cowbell, sits there and manually puts all the calls in my queue. I remember that one. It's so bad that my white coworkers were able to sit and watch Netflix on their phones for hours before they got one call. My black female coworker, who does not work in the contact center, complained that she was getting all these random calls and she wasn't even logged into the queue. Even when she would ignore the calls were supposed to go to the next available person when the phones are managed properly and justly, but they did not. The calls just kept bouncing back to her as if she was the only one on the phones. I have to reiterate, she was not logged in, and this is not her department. Now, I can confirm that they are choosing to abuse me and my black coworker directly. This was completely done on purpose, but I wonder if they, the whites in charge, made a mistake in sending the calls to her, as out names begin with the same three letters. I wonder if they meant to attack me instead of her, but were concerned with abusing a black person. They did not care who they were abusing as long as it was a black person. The phone system is a VOPE system, so it knows about this and gives the manager permission to abuse the phones. Oh, sorry. IT, I got confused. Sorry. The phone system is a VOPE system, so IT knows about this and gives the manager permission to abuse the phones. The IT person actually went over to this black employee and started talking about his dog and personal life as probably a way to distract her from seeing how evil all of them are. It's suspicious indeed. Now, that is an interesting one. If you are noting that in the workplace where whites are coming to talk to you about nonsense, their pets, what they did for the weekend, what cuisine they plan, to cook for the 4th of July holiday as a distraction, either distracting you from work that you have to do or other things that are happening that are more important, that would be something to note, because I think that probably does happen regularly in the workplace and beyond, in terms of just being distracted from things that you should be paying attention to or things that you should be investing your time in. She continues, I was also able to confirm that none of the black employees are able to apply to positions internally through the online website. We are all blocked and you can't apply from home either. My non-black, non-white coworker tried to apply for a position internally, although she was the only one licensed. They did everything in their power to block her. My white female manager, who is married to a black male, told her she wasn't a good candidate for the position because as you get older, you become forgetful, and my white female boss is much older than this non-white, non-black employee. I have a feeling since more whites have joined the organization, they are trying to force us out by any means necessary. The age comment, incidentally, that's something this is not the context of age supremacy, but I did just see a report in the New York Times today about what they call ageism, discrimination of people that are older being mistreated in the workplace. A comment like that, I would definitely write that down, because you're not supposed to mistreat older people. And so to say to someone that you wouldn't be a good candidate for this job because you're getting older, so you're probably more forgetful or will be becoming senile, basically. I mean, wow. I think that I would put that down, and a comment like that might be much easier to go with human resources or another in person in the organization, as opposed to, I think someone practiced racism against me. Just saying that, yeah, I was told, I went to inquire about a possible position open in the company, and I was told that I'm getting old and might be too forgetful for this job. Is that correct? Is that, company policy and procedure about evaluating who is most appropriate for a position? That could be one way you approach that situation. She continues, my last part, my white female manager tried to blame me for something I did not do. Matter of fact, the person who made the mistake, their name was right there in large font, and the contract was so new that this employee was the only one to touch it, then gave it off to my manager. Yet my manager calls me to say I did something wrong on the contract. I was so dumbfounded when she tried to point to an error that I clearly did not do and explain it. I stay on this lady's mind 24/7, I believe, because she comes into work looking for ways to attack me. I went into our company system from home to request PTO, and my manager actually tried to call me while I was off the clock about it. They could have just spoke to me in the morning the next day. That, I think, I would be very mindful of any of those type of phone calls or efforts. This is basically to make you work when you are not on duty. I would completely reject that. I think other people have also talked about situations where white employers knew that this person was not on the job. This person was at home, was not on the clock, whatever it is, knew that they were not working, and still either calling their personal cell phone, calling the phone at their residence, or calling them, getting in contact with them in some way where they know they're not even in the actual office, to get them to do some work or question them about something, exactly as she ended at the conclusion, for something, it's not, you know, there's a fire or, you know, all of the company secrets and our strategies for the upcoming fiscal year. We've lost it all. You know, this is nothing even like that. You know, did you take an extra stamp home with you on the way? You know, something trivial, really, really small. And it's like, you know, I got to call and disrupt your evening right now, or call and disrupt your day off right now to talk about this. Or sometimes it'll even be to see if they can finagle you into coming in and doing some work. Resist all of that. If you are off, you can email, you can message, you can use a post-it note, or better yet, you can exercise patience until I'm back on the clock. Again, unless this is some sort of emergency or you have one of those jobs where you already know that's part of the arrangement, that they can just contact you at any time. The people that are writing in and commenting, they are not in those situations. I would say that is an exercise of Black self-respect. You are not picking up the phone. You are not available at their every beck and call to take up, you know, your time. Whites stealing your time, that's a major way that they practice racism. The blaming aspect, those false allegations, again, I recommend everyone, once you've seen that pattern, whether it's happening to other people, that's why you want to be alert in the workplace. Once you've seen that pattern of, okay, they're going to be making these false allegations against me or other Black people, all of us maybe, I'm going to be prepared. So that way I'm not going to have an emotional response when this happens. I'll just practice being calm, and I'll have my method for investigating, because I'll already know that this is bogus and that this is probably just something to waste my time and to see how stressed that they can be. So my counter-racist objective is just going to be, hey, well, let's go through the inquiry and see what happened. And then once we go through and it's wrong, and the same thing that I said last week, I would really be moving in the direction of, I'm going to need a retraction from this. If I was accused of something falsely, because, you know, my reputation is important and time and energy is important as well. So I really take that seriously. If I'm accused of wrongdoing and it turns out that it's false, I want to make sure that's, you know, clearly stated on the record. It might be something where it's, I would like a written retraction, because I think that shows a level of seriousness about things. And I think other folks have used that strategy and requesting a retraction when there was some sort of false allegation or charge made in a work environment, and then they investigated and found out that it was a false charge. Oh, yeah. Make it serious, because a lot of times they'll be really serious and they'll have told a whole lot of people that you messed this up and you messed that up. And I can't believe we hired that no good firm, and affirmative action is the worst thing. And they've got on a roll and then it's false. Well, yeah, let's have the same enthusiasm and making sure that it's clear, abundantly clear to all that that was a false charge. And I think that level of seriousness, when you show that, that can slow down that, you know, exuberance to go and blame a Black person. Oh, it's your fault. You did it. Oh, yeah, this, we got to watch this one. We can't do the blame a nigger strategy on this one, because this one is real serious. They're not going to chimp out. They're not going to get emotional. They're going to stay calm. They're going to say, let's do the inquiry. And then at the end, they're going to say, okay, I want to retract him. We don't want to go through. We'd rather get somebody who's going to get upset and jump up and down and that sort of thing. It'll be more fun that way. If you have your own strategies for any of these problems that were shared, or if you have your own situation, the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Additionally, if we have any listeners in the Atlanta or Detroit area, or if you have lived in those areas, I guess especially if you've lived in either of those two cities where you actually worked. If you lived there as a child, not that that's not important, and you might be able to respond when I get to this bit of workplace racism information later on, but especially if you lived in one of these two cities where you actually worked there for some time, would be grand. We'll bring that up a little later on the program if you do not spectate and chime in. We'll check the switchboard, see if folks have comments, questions. First portion, let's see, *61 if you have commentary, questions, your own workplace situation you would like to share.
Can I be heard?
Hi.
Yes, ma'am. Heard both of you. We'll start with our caller in the great state of Virginia.
Hello, Gus. Hello, everyone. Yes, I'm close to where this tragedy happened. I'd mentioned it last Friday. And it's been very disturbing this past week because I have doubts about the reports. I've watched the television coverage, the press conferences where the police officers and the city manager spoke. They spoke, I think it was on Saturday and on Sunday, and they gave a little bit of detail, but again, not a lot of information about this person that they're claiming is the shooter. I have doubts, big doubts. And, you know, we can't believe everything that we hear. So it's very tragic because it's not certain and it really isn't adding up. Even the way they described what had unfolded and the way that the news coverage has been delivered, they'll say one thing and then that just becomes the record. So at one point early on, they said he was disgruntled. And then they said that he was a good employee and that he, first they said he was fired. Then they said, no, he was still employed. So there were a lot of inconsistencies that were coming out early on. And then they ultimately said that he had emailed his resignation. But, you know, they were trying to locate the letter. And it just seemed very strange, a lot of the reports. But they're not sharing a lot about him. And again, you mentioned, Gus, that they made this statement that they were only going to say his name once. So I think they've kind of, you know, made their decision. And, you know, who knows, we could find out 30 years from now, you know, that something different had happened, which we've seen. You know, we've seen that. We saw that with the Central Park Five. And, you know, that's coming out, too. You know, things change or, you know, some new information comes out 30 years later. And then all of a sudden, you know, this person's name had been smeared. So that's just my VGQ, I guess, opinion on what's been going on based on the closeness, you know, that I've seen and just how everything has kind of been reported. But that's all I'll share. I'll mute. Thank you.
Much obliged for sharing. Caller in Virginia, that's been my assessment. It just seems like there's not a lot of information. I appreciate pointing out those discrepancies as well in the reporting. It seems most of the reports that I've seen over the past week or so since all of this came out was that he was still employed and he had submitted his 2 weeks resignation. The New York Times article said he had a working security pass, his ID and everything, and that he had just submitted his 2 weeks resignation, but he was still employed. And I just, if what the New York Post, the article there, if that's to be, you know, taken or how you assess that, them saying that he had scuffles with employees and had a violent altercation, I just can't imagine. You still got your clearance. There's no warnings. There's no even put you on leave of absence for a week or so. It's difficult to process, and I think there's a lot more information that we just don't have. Mr. Craddock, it's reported he does have military history. I always think that's important when they have these sort of incidents, and it's someone who has some sort of relationship to the armed services, has been active, that is important. I think it's important in this case, too. The other female caller who spoke up simultaneously, if you have commentary, ma'am, you should be with us. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Hi, callers. This is Dr. Mania. I wanted to report. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I tried to log in on the internet, on your Vogue line, and it's saying that it is unavailable to contact the service provider. So I tried it on Google Explorer and Firefox, and it's telling me that, and I tried it on two different computers. I have two laptops, and it's telling me that it's unavailable. So I'm not sure if you've gotten anybody else that has reported that, or if it's just me that's not able to log in on the computer now. So I wanted to make you aware of that. And or have you got any other information in regards to having problems with the rope line?
This is the first that I've heard of it. So thank you for making me aware of it. I generally, I'll check it myself once we get off the air to see if it works for me. So then I can at least say something about it tomorrow. But yes, this is the first that I've heard of it, and I'll investigate once we get off the air.
Everything as far as my work is concerned is it's going. It's going pretty well because I have just been codified. But I did have an incident where the supervisor did talk to me in a very hostile manner. But, I didn't react or anything. I tried to act prior to maintaining my composure and success in my ability. And he did it in front of individuals also. So, that was quite interesting, to say the least. And then one of the, the onlooker that was there had something to say about it. But I try not to react. I basically just let them know that, you don't have to worry about me anymore in regards to the situation. But I think that's basically the best route to go when, even when, the emotional intelligence is the best route to go. Not allowing other people, no matter how they act, to get you to act in an emotional manner, because, it will turn around on you, even if the other individual is wrong, even based on what you've been reading about the other young lady, what she's been going through at her job and all the antics that's been going on. But the best way, because in the past, I would not have done that. I would have acted, emotional, responded, reacted. But I'm just glad that I am learning, to conduct myself in a better manner. And that's all I had to share. I just really wanted to make you aware that about the rope line. And I said they probably messing with his line again, or maybe it's just they're just messing with my line and not everybody else's. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Oh, it's possible they could be messing with your line. I know a lot of people have, even though I haven't heard specifically about the vote, I have had over the years lots of people have conveyed difficulties with being able to dial in or being knocked offline. Strangely, I myself have had lots of difficulties dialing in. I think I had mentioned on air and told some people as well, even though it was not the VOPE line, just dialing in via the phone line. I was not able to dial in on a regular basis for about a month, month and a half this week. I had to use the International Mexico number to dial in for several weeks. So it would not surprise me if there was some sort of disruption or interference, system of racism, white supremacy. But as for the emotional intelligence, I do think that's important. As I said, I do try to stress that on a regular basis. I also think that the self-care aspect of that is critical, because I know sometimes when people are trying to say things to you verbally to get you upset or call you out, humiliate us, the whole range of things, the insults, all of that, that can take a toll. So I do think outstanding, have that as codified as can be in the moment. And I think codification also means checking in to make sure how we're feeling. If you need to take that bathroom break, after the incident or whatever, and just get some breath, check in, see how you're feeling, make sure everything is good. Sometimes we can be outstanding, codified in the moment. And those moments can still have an impact where we're frustrated or upset with how, things happen. Just having to deal with that sort of tackiness, just make sure that you're doing okay. If there needs to be some replenishing, taking time for you, but emotional intelligence, staying composed, that is the core of counter-racist codification in the workplace and expecting these types of things to happen. Let's see.
Jeff, can I ask you one question?
Yes, ma'am.
You said that you have a an international number. Would it be possible that I get that number just in case I have any issues in the future? Do you have that number available, or would you be able to tell me what the number is so I'll have it on for the future?
I'm just trying to pull up the tab. Oh, there it is, right in front of me, if I could read. Okay, so the international number. This is from Mexico. The country code there is 52. And then the number.
Five.
Yes, ma'am. The country.
Well, meaning 52?
Yes, ma'am, 52. That's the country code, and then the number.
Oh, so do I have to dial that in? Do I have to dial that when I'm dialing the number?
Right. This would be international rates. The phone plan that I have, it covers international rates, so it's the same if I'm calling this number or the Mexico number. But yeah, it would be a Mexico call, like you're calling to Mexico. So it's country code 52, and then the number is 899-274-9315. That is the Mexico dial-in number. If anyone should find themselves in Cancun, Tijuana, Mexico DF, and you are hanging out for a few days and you want to dial into the cows and not pay any rates, there you go. Mexico dial-in number. You can dial in. It's the same code as normal, 564-943-pound, and you will be on the switchboard.
You're wonderful. I'm sure that this information is going to help other people also. So I'm glad I asked the question. Thanks a lot. I'll meet my line.
For sure. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. *61. Again, if we have folks, if you have lived, current residents, Atlanta or Detroit, please do not be a spectator. I reckon if you've lived in one of those two areas and then moved on, that counts too. I guess you might be able to respond to the question, especially if you worked, if part of your work history is in either of those two cities, then definitely do not be a spectator. I'll bring that up as we proceed. Others who dialed in with a hand up, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, the Black African.
Thank you, sir. I guess I wanted to share, on emails, one of the strategies that I use, especially if you are, because in my workplace, I'm responsible for one of the group's major reports. So when I write my emails containing these reports, I will have a sentence in there saying that if anyone sees any errors or if there's missing information, that they should inform me. I think that's important to add a disclaimer to your group emails, so that if anything comes up and there's an error or there's something missing, because even though you're generating the report, everyone is responsible for the report. So a sentence in there, I think, is important. The Dwayne Craddock report, when I saw your post, I haven't read the article yet, the New York Post article yet. I just saw it earlier today. In fact, a little bit before I called it, it said that he was violent in the office, that he had been violent with coworkers. I don't believe that. I don't see a scenario where a Black male is violent in the workplace and he is not arrested, terminated, kept from the premises. I worked in a workplace where a Black male, I would say, unjustly was terminated. He had a job where I believe that I believe the black male thought that I would have this job forever. And he was terminated. And I don't know the circumstances of this, but they changed. I guess maybe he, during this termination, he displayed emotion, and they changed the whole security system, codes, elevators. You had to use your card or whatever. You had to come in through a certain door where there was security. So a black man being violent in the workplace, I don't believe that. I remember when, I can't remember, I'm going to have to look this up, where there was the Navy Yard shooting in the Washington, D.C. area, and it was reported that it was a black male. I was in the workplace when it was happening, and I was reading the report, and I started to talk to my white coworkers, and none of them were worried. I think they had seen the reports, too. They didn't flinch. There was no emergency. I think they just didn't believe the reports. So I just don't believe this report. And I also just wanted to add, I've worked in a few different workplaces, and I don't think any of the black males there were listeners of the cows or whatever, but many of the black males, no matter what their job, I mean, you know, mailroom, whatever, they were quite codified. They were codified. They had a system. They were there on time. They provided me with helpful information. So I just, especially with somebody that has military background, that's the utmost discipline, I think. I don't know. Black people, I guess, vocalizing their growth plans. I think, I don't know if it's a, I don't want to say it's a, in the company per se, I don't think it's a mistake. I don't know if it's a mistake. It might be a mistake because an associate of mine told me about how he had vocalized his growth plans, and with coworkers, with management, and how immediately after that, everything became difficult for him, to the point where he was being put on continuous probations, like 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, you have to stay in this group or you can't, you know, that kind of mode. The Drake report that you have, when I became aware of this, not necessarily the Drake one. I saw the Drake one. I think the Drake one is older than the Kyle Lowry one. But the Kyle Lowry one, somebody posted it on a WhatsApp group. And it was a YouTube video of a white person reporting this. And the white person added that the gentleman, Mr. Kyle Lowry, he said that he was annoying. Everybody knows that Kyle Lowry, you know, he's like Russell Westbrook. He's annoying. He's so annoying. And that was the first, I mean, I don't watch sports as much as I used to, but because of the circle of associates that I have, every now and then I will, you know, I hear enough about it. And this gentleman, and this person compared him to Russell Westbrook. He's like Russell Westbrook, whom Russell Westbrook, I think when he came into the league, he would dress up in questionable attire, I guess. But I think it was white people that were making him do that. But I think white people really don't like Russell Westbrook. And I think the biggest reason is that he is codified, not only in the workplace, but as he has a family, he has a black wife, they have children. I think he married his college girlfriend. So he is, and I've seen like his posts on Instagram where it seems like that is a very serious part of his life. like I don't hear things about him, any kind of reports about him off of the court. It's usually on the court where he's responding to racism. And the gentleman, I don't know if this is accurate, but the report said that this gentleman that pushed Kyle Lowry was a billionaire. I think that's important. The credit union report was very important to me, and I joined a group of people in so-called Africa, Southern Africa, that started a credit union, and I thought the report was amazing that they burned down the building. I mean, wow. And I would say that because I haven't shared about this sort of like business, but I think important things to note about business is that you need, and I only realized this when I went to school to get my so-called MBA, things that you want to read very carefully are the tax codes of that area and the tax codes pertaining to that business classification, and then the business law pertaining to that business classification. For example, if you go into a business as a partnership, there are particular business laws pertaining to a partnership, and there are tax codes pertaining to that partnership. And you want to read everything that you can on that business classification. There is no, from my readings at least, there is no, even a sole proprietorship, there is no, how can I put this? There's not one that is best in my calculation. Every one of them has areas where white people can take advantage of that and practice racism. But the tax code is where I believe you can make your most gains. I won't say profits, but gains, in that you can make money off of losses in certain businesses, like real estate. What else did I want to?
Somebody used this term. I didn't come up with this term, but yoga body. It was a black female. She was talking about employment and just the area in so-called California, like Northern California, the Bay Area, that, you know, employment in that tech bio space, and how there were all these white women with, I guess, very slim athletic bodies, and she called them yoga bodies. And I think that I was thinking about what Ivy was talking about a couple weeks ago with my traffic ticket. I don't know if this is, but in the workplace, it was a training session, and I was part of a group, and we're going through this group. It was like a long-term thing, and we had like a final sort of like presentation. And I realized early on that this presentation, that this assignment would not be gainful or to my employment. So I participated, but I did not participate fully. And in the final presentation, I did not participate. And a white woman said that I was stoic. And I didn't know what that meant at that time. I mean, I sort of had an idea. And so I asked, I was like, what? Like, what? I was afraid. Like, I was like worried. Like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, because I thought stoic meant non-emotional, like a non-emotional being, like no energy, nothing, non-participant. That's what I thought. And she said that I was calm and I wasn't, you know, worried that, you know, people would say things about. And at first I didn't really pay attention to her. But then later on in the evening, I guess they had events. Some of the groups, you know, they would go out to bars and whatnot. And this white female, I was just standing in like the hotel, and she came to me and invited me to one of the events. And I think it was, I don't know if it was my changing body, demeanor, whatever, but it was almost like a sexual invitation. And I said I would think about it, but of course I wasn't going to go. And then in the workplace, in the so-called office, a white man, one that I do not work with, he's in the same area as me, but I do not work with him in any way. He had introduced himself, and then later on, he tried to start up a conversation with me. And how he started the conversation with me, he called me, I can't remember if he said a mystery man or a mysterious man. And so he began to ask questions, to ask me questions. And I, thankfully, because of the show, I started to ask him questions, and then the conversation ended. So, I guess I was thinking about it this week. It's like a good thing that, because I think when you are becoming healthy physically and you're listening to programs like this, like everything about you, I had been listening to this program, but then now I'm becoming physically sort of matching the program. So it's like, I'm wondering, in the workplace, it's being seen, and now I need to alter my code. And I was wondering, because certain things just happen in the moment. It's like the traffic thing. I had been thinking about it so much and sort of like annoyed with myself. Should I have, you know, acquiesced? Like, what should I have done? But these things happen because so quickly, because I think you change, and even like your posture changes, everything about you changes, you know? So I had been thinking about, I believe it's good, but I just believe that you need to change your code accordingly once you get those results. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Absolutely. The Black African, I think, and it might be, you know, to I guess inquire or check out with some other people who they're into counter racism, and they can kind of observe and see how their thought process has changed. Thoughts, speech, actions, emotions have evolved as they have continued to learn about white supremacy, racism. And then with the eating and exercise component, as you kind of get, I know Dr. Kanban, he talks about kind of aligning all of yourselves, health and economics, politics, all of that. Like, you know, maybe you're reading and, you know, you got your Black self-respect together, and, you know, Dr. Welsing left and right, but you eat potato chips all day long. He said, you got to get that together. You kind of get it all together. So once you start doing all of that, in particular, like you're saying, you're taking better care of yourself, you feel better, you even got better posture. Your skin looks better, everything, just taking care of yourself, exercising, eating correctly as best you can in the system. When I think we've said before how racists, they are observant. They will note if you've been joking around and hooting and hollering and laughing it up with them before, not very codified. You come in joking about what was on Power or whatever, the latest love in hip hop. You come in joking about that all the time before. Everything is ha ha this and ha ha that. Now that's totally changed. You don't talk about Power anymore. You don't talk about Empire anymore. You're not laughing at all their jokes. You don't go out drinking with them anymore. They for sure will notice if some of that is in conjunction with, wait a minute, man, you dropped 35 pounds too. Like, what is going on here? Huge difference. I think they will recognize all of that as Black self-respect. Wow, this person is missing everything. They're missing our Cheetos. They're missing everything that we're throwing at them. To mess them up. What did you just say? What a mysterious fellow. What is going on here? What is he doing? Have you paid attention? Because, again, my contention, racists, they take note. They are watching. I remember from my personal experience, whites that I didn't even know, who would just see me, you know, in passing or going to the yoga studio or something like that. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you've lost so much weight. What are you doing? Did you change your diet? What's going on? Like, what? I couldn't even tell you these people's names. So absolutely, racists, they are mindful. They notice when you're taking care of yourself. And in my view, they as I've stated, they're mindful of their victims. And wow, we might have to keep an especially close. And especially we come questioning what's up with you and you flipping around and asking us questions. Like, oh my gosh, I went in to go ask him some questions and he started questioning me. I had to end the conversation. You got to watch him. You got to watch him. He's close. That, I mean, I could be wrong. Other folks certainly can, you know, give you their perspective, but that's pretty typical in terms of what I've seen in terms of how whites respond to racists. The white woman, I think you noted who came in, it seemed like it might have been something sexual. Be especially mindful of that, making sure you're not with her alone or anything of that nature. She might be going back to report to how you responded. What did you say? He didn't seem like he was interested in going back and networking. It's a lot to be mindful of in the system of racism. Whites, they are watching, they are alert, they do talk. Wow. Thank you kindly for sharing and even pointing out that segment in North Carolina where they talked about burning down the building. As again, even if you are an entrepreneur, you can expect all sorts of terrorism and tackiness aimed at black businesses. They do not intend to see black people doing well at all. It absolutely disgusts racist man, racist woman, racist child. I will give out the number again. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I think Black African mentioned as well, thought that was important. Mark Stevens, a suspected race soldier who shoved Kyle Lowry at the game earlier this week. Reports about him perhaps being a billionaire, probably is. I think he owns, is co-owner of the Warriors. And I think they said if something happened, like with Donald Sterling, where he's forced to sell the team, he would stand to make something like, I think it was almost about $250 million. And he doesn't even own the team outright. He's just a co-owner. So if they forced him to sell his shares, he would come up, as they say. And adding that for significance, because I think if this had just been a white man race soldier who was worth $100,000, he might have been in jail. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have questions, suggestions on what's been shared thus far, you have your own situation, lines should be open. Proceed. While we're waiting for folks to get to their next comments, I will share our next written commentary. This is Kizzy's cousin. Make sure I get in all our emails from callers. Again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you would prefer to email in your comment suggestion. Kizzy's cousin, she writes, firstly, thank you for asking Thomas in New York my question. His report that he is in a much better position after leaving the toxic plantation was very important. To catch people up. So Thomas in New York, the racists on his previous job accused him, false allegations. They accused him of stealing the fruit money. He had been talking about so many problems going to purchase fruit for these attorneys. And so he moved on before things got worse, seemed the gallows were imminent and got a better position, different organization. And so Kizzy's cousin, she wanted to know if hindsight is 2020, so they say, if there's anything he would have done to maybe put himself in a better position to avoid, you know, everything coming about with the accusations. And he said, you know, could have done receipts and this, that, but it's difficult to say. I think this is on the compensatory call-in from last week, but he did give his response. You can go back in the archives and check it out. Frickin' Fruit Bowl, man. Okay, so continuing, Kizzy's cousin. It's very easy to become desperate and or frightened to leave even hostile plantations. His situation has improved, which is great for him and motivation to listeners of this broadcast. I think the point of emphasis with that for me is I think all of us, I keep saying being alert, being mindful of things that are happening in the workplace. If it's looking as though either, wow, this is no longer the situation for me for whatever reason, what you know, want, your interests have changed, you have grown, you're looking for something better for yourself, they have decided it's time to mistreat a nigger, and the nigger that we're going to mistreat today is you. Whatever the situation is, there are times when this has come to an end, it's time for me to pick a different location. I think it is in our best interest as counter-racists if we can kind of see if things are happening where they are deciding that it's time for us to be moving along. If we can see that as early as possible and go ahead and make moves early, as opposed to waiting and being in denial about it and just waiting for the inevitable to come and strike us, I think it's much better to be proactive. That's what Thomas in New York did, and we've heard that from other listeners. I think that just takes being alert, paying attention to what's happening around you, and you making moves and not waiting for racists to decide what's going to happen with your career fate. Continuing, on a less positive note, I want to pick up an issue raised by the female caller who reported that she is being forced out of her job due to personality clashes, in quote, with her new team after being promoted and now demoted. She mentioned that she had requested that her employer move her to a different position on the grounds of disability. This is something that is at the employer's discretion, irrespective of any so-called legislative protections. She reported that she was not offered a new role and that she is effectively working her notice unless she applies for and gets another position at the company. This was all last week. The lesson for non-white people is that these policies are a trap. While they may work for race soldiers, in reality, they are a mechanism for an employer to sack an employee with possibly no legal comeback on the company. Be very careful. Summary of racist activity for the week. Number one, the racist female saboteur attempted to palm off her work on me, but I resisted. We were leading an event, but to date, I have not been invited to present on this aspect of the project. No one from senior management would be in attendance, so she and a non-white black female were supposed to lead. The saboteur sent an email asking me and the other non-white female if all the arrangements were in place, listing all of her questions. I reminded her that the management had agreed that either she or the non-white female should finalize the arrangements. She also suggested we split up the presentation as it was too much for one person, in quotes. She was supposed to present with the non-white female, so I suspect the one person she referred to was herself. An act of supremacy, I let her know I would not be presenting. I concluded that she was too scared and wanted me to play mammy. At the event, there was another race soldier who joined us from a partner organization. During one of the breaks, she said to me that the saboteur presented really well and that she can tell the saboteur has worked in the sector for a long time. This statement was totally out of the blue and probably an example of them Voltroning. I made no comment. I also noted to myself that she did not compliment or mention the non-white female who was also presenting. Again, an act of racism. Love the no comment and pointing out that no glorious comments or compliments were offered for the non-white female. And I'm just, I did not see this. This is something that happened on the other side of the world. So I'm just totally speaking just based on my experience research with racists. But I would probably guess the white woman, the saboteur, didn't even do a quality job. It's hard for me to imagine that this woman is that great at her job if she's sitting here left and right trying to palm off duties and responsibilities to go in and do this talk. If she was really that great at her job, it would have just been, oh yeah, nigger's move, I got this. Anywho, number two. I mentioned last week that I had been re-listening to the Workplace Racism Archives. I'm dealing with people who keep touching me, and I'm trying to work out how to address the matter without causing more problems. That is the golden rule. I do not want people to touch me, even people I like. Most do it in passing or in conversation, usually on my arm or shoulder. I don't think any offense is intended, which is, for me, making it more awkward to deal with, but I still want it to stop. And then there is the saboteur. She touches me in a very similar way, but it is not a friendly gesture. I conclude she is trying to show her dominance and also irritate me. I haven't said anything to date as I'm afraid of the dramatics and fake tears that will ultimately follow. I'm so irritated, I need to wait until I am emotionally able to do so in a calm manner. I would welcome you or listeners' guidance on how to approach this. We've had a lot of touch issues. I mean, the archives, wowee. With workplace racism, there probably are a number of different examples of the touching in the workplace. I called Mr. Fuller to ask him about this one. We had a non-white female. This was years ago. I don't even think workplace racism existed as like a separate program at the time. But I called Mr. Fuller to ask him about it because we had a victim. She had a white woman who would touch her in the workplace. And it was the same type of deal. It wasn't where I guess you got the one who's doing it as an irritant. They didn't have beef per se. So it wasn't like, oh, I hate this woman, and then she's come to hug me. We had a different person, non-white female. She had a white woman. She had told her explicitly, you know, I don't like all the hugging and stuff in the workplace. We can do a handshake. And I think she great job in explaining in my views, hey, I'm a mom, I have children, and, you know, we got germs and things going around. I just try and keep the touching to a minimal. We can be professional. We can be homies, all that. Let's just keep it to a handshake or whatever. The white woman continued, and in fact, the terrorism of the hugging escalated because after she did a great job, she didn't get nasty and, you know, go wagging her finger in her face and things like that. Just what I just said, basically, when paraphrasing. At this point, the white woman started sneaking up from behind and doing the hugs and that sort of thing. Now it's a covert action to molest you. At that point, I talked to Mr. Fuller about this one, and he said, I would make it clear, and from that point on, it would be snatching away, pulling away. Hey, I'm not doing any touching. Now, this type of thing where it's, I guess if it's like a pat on the arm or a grab on the shoulder, if it's across the board, and especially since you said, or she wrote, I don't even, you know, appreciate it or want people touching me that I like, even if we're friendly and we have rapport, even then, let's keep your paws to yourself in the workplace. Man, I would make that clear. You could bring that up. I think especially in 2019, Jimmy Savile across the pond, I'm sure they heard of Bill Cosby over here. There is so much going on with whether it's Me Too and all of the incidents of sexual impropriety in the workplace and what have you. I would think just saying, and especially if it's across the board, can we minimize some of the touching in the workplace? I'm just not a fan of all the touching. NPR even did a report on this where they said you could just say it in this way. I'm just not a fan of all the touching. I wouldn't even go into a lot of detail. Like I'm all about being a team player, but we could just keep it to a handshake. I don't like being touched on the arms, patted, hugged, caressed, a light squeeze. None of that. I'm very sensitive to touching. I don't want to go into all the reasonings for that, but if we can eliminate all of the unnecessary pawing in the workplace, I would be glad. Thank you. Like, I would just say it might, if you could, you know, just make that said to one person, or you can say it to the folks as they say it. You can include the thing about the sickness too, you know, germs and all that. I just want to minimize that as best we can. Don't want any unnecessary romances or anything like that flourishing in the workplace. Thank you kindly. But I would make a note and I would say something about it every time. It doesn't have to be a situation where it's, you know, getting upset or accusing someone. If you don't want to make it a big deal, causing more problems where they might end up crying, or, oh, but I just, you know, we're in a workplace and sure, we work together. They might hit you with that family line. I think of you as a sister. We've been working together and going through all of this. I am totally here to support anything that you need. If I can be of assistance, you let me know. I am a part of the team. I am not relinquishing my role and my spot here as a valued member of the team. And I hope my value doesn't decrease, but I'm just really not comfortable with all of the petting in the workplace. And I would probably use a word like that, because if it was like violation, like Thomas in New York, and he said the guy tried to grab his zipper in the workplace, then it would be molestation, all the rest of it. But for this, yeah, I'm just not with all the petting in the workplace, like a handshake. I'm very conservative, and I would probably employ that one too. I'm very conservative when it comes to affection in the workplace. Very conservative. A handshake is about the most I can muster. And if that's consistent across the board, what's the issue? I would just be a stickler about that. I would say something about it. I'd probably use the exact same tone and type of wording that I'm using now, but it would be light. It would be consistent, but people would know I'm not joking. And I would say something every time to make sure that, you know, everybody gets it. And if I could really, I'd be trying to think if there's a way I could do it one time so that I don't have to keep making this statement. If we had any sort of meeting where all the offenders are present, people that like to do the squeezing on the shoulder or arm or whatever it is, just, hey, I'm conservative about workplace touching. I'm still part of the team. I'm down to help out as best we can, but a handshake. If we could just keep it at a handshake, I would super appreciate it. Thank you kindly. And moving on with the day. If any folks think that that might cause more problems saying it that way in the workplace, let me know. And or if any folks have a better strategy for how you go about accomplishing this, just kind of squashing all of that with everybody so that everybody know, oh yeah, we're just going to do Kizzy's here, Kizzy's cousin, excuse. We're just going to do handshake or that's it. She doesn't want all the rest of it. Fine. If anybody else has worked out a code that is brilliant, eliminating all that unnecessary touching in the workplace, please share. The number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. See if we have folks, if they have any other folks who have figured out a no-touch suggestion and or if you have your own workplace racism situation, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. I just kind of like tuned in. With the touching, the non-white black victim of racism, white supremacy has to have a policy on that in the workplace. It's such a common issue. Just about every antidote under the global system of racism, white supremacy that we may attempt to or actually apply into our workplace, you're taking a chance. You know, just I don't know whether it's an aggressive one or a non-aggressive one. You're taking a chance. But I would say my best understanding of it based on my years of employment is to take the more aggressive stance in this particular case with the touching. For the most part, the perpetrator, meaning the white one or even a non-white one, is aware of the situation that they are creating. They're aware of it, and they are banking on that you are not going to make it a subject, not going to make it an issue. So that's why you have to be aggressive with that particular infraction that they're imposing. I would say the results, in the most part, are favorable results. You will start seeing signs of that. I would say from my experience, you will see it very quickly in the workplace. You will see it very quickly in the workplace, and to the standpoint of people who have not had the interest to touch you, would have that understanding of you as a person. That's how the workplace it normally is. People really get to know each other. You know, it may not be so much in a personal way, but they would have a understanding of some of the lesser do's and don'ts with that particular person. And I think the opportunity is just waiting on that person to be able to just be bold enough to enact it. As I mentioned before, my attitude always has been you take a chance in your workplace anyway, especially as a non-white black person. It's a very, very, it's a risk, you know, doing those 8 hours every day, you know. So as long as you have an understanding that you're doing something that is correct for yourself, then, you know, apply it. Apply it right from the earliest attempt that you can make on that. And that's my thoughts on that. And I'll keep listening and going from there as far as my comments. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I know on this same subject matter, the no touching or just incorrect touching in the workplace. We had Mr. Edward Williams on the program. He's the founder of counter-racism.com and author of the book, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy. We had him as a guest on the program repeatedly, but to discuss this specifically, and he exactly what Mr. Williams just said, he said, number one, hey, racists, they can fire you for not saying anything in the workplace. So, I mean, hey, and just as you're kind of always in a position of taking a chance or being vulnerable. That being said, with the touching thing, his was he repeated Walter Beach. I would cut it at the knees. I would just go ahead and say something. And if it's, you know, they're going to get upset or what have you over me just calmly saying that, you know, if we could please refrain from the unnecessary touching, just minimize it to a handshake. If that's what I'm going to get fired for, okay, that'll be my counter-racist assignment. But yeah, to just go ahead and say something. And sooner rather than later, especially once you see that you got even one white person who seems like, oh yeah, they're doing this deliberately to annoy and mistreat me. Like, oh yeah, I would try and say something as soon as possible. I would figure out whatever statement that you're going to be comfortable being able to say. Verbals and body, your bodying and posture, I think, really important on this one. Non-Clemson grad, I think, mentioned before, it would be a lot of eye contact. I would add a little bit of bass in my voice to make sure that I'm serious. Again, not talking nasty to anyone. This might be one where they say, oh, my goodness, we got an angry black male. We got an angry black female. That could happen, but I would make sure as much Dr. Welsing and black self-respect as I can muster. Please, no touching. Handshake is fine. I am part of the team. I'm here to hurt, here to help as courteously as I can possibly be. But I'm just real conservative. That's what I said. I'd be real conservative, or I am real conservative about all of the affection, displays of affection in the workplace. Anybody else have suggestions for how they would eliminate the touching in the workplace without causing more problems?
Can I be heard?
The black African, yes, sir.
I had a recent incident where a white female, a very senior white female, sort of, it was in a meeting, and I guess this goes to, I think there was somebody that wrote in, I don't know if it's Kizzy's cousin or somebody else, where they were talking about positioning yourself sort of in the meeting prior to the meeting. And so I didn't do that. And a sort of senior person sat next to me, and I had been making suggestions about this meeting, this particular meeting, and the meeting started to go well, and she sort of gave me, like, I think people call it like sort of like a church hug, like a side church hug. And it was, she sat next to me. Usually I sit away from senior people where I can look at them when I'm sort of like across the table when I'm making suggestions or asking questions. And so after that, whenever I would meet her, I would always keep my distance. I would be very aware that she's close to me. I would, even if we were having a conversation in the middle of, like, of the hall or something, if she took a step closer to me, I would take a step sideways or backwards. And I agree with the retired firefighter that I went to another site, and someone touched my shoulder, and it was in the middle of the meeting. The person touched my shoulder, and at this point I had been listening to the program. So I half stood up and I stared at them, and everyone sort of like noticed, like it was like a noticeable moment in the meeting. Everyone noticed. And the person nervously took away their hand, and then I continued to look at them. And then sat down, and the person didn't touch me, didn't speak to me, none of that. And so I agree that you have to be, I guess this person is at a point where they have to be vocal about it, but I was more talking to the point where, you know, in the earlier stages of this touching. And then I noticed that some people in the office were coming into my work area, so-called cubicle. So I changed my cubicle in a way that they usually in these cubicles have like a sort of like a guest chair. Like if somebody comes to your cubicle, they can sit on the chair. So I put it right at where you enter the cubicle. In that way, I've noticed that everyone that comes into my cubicle sits down on this chair because it's placed there. It's like as if it's something, it invites them to sit there. So they don't come in into a position where they can see my computer, whatever my screen, or touch me. Everyone just sits at this chair. And then I had I don't know what to call this, a suggestion, but I think the retired firefighter he talks about the, I believe it's called the DCS program on the compensatory call, like tomorrow's call. And because he, I think this is a volunteer, I don't know if it's volunteer, but I believe the classification of retired is still sort of, it's implying employment of some sort. And I think he's still volunteering. I think that those call-ins should be made in this program. Because I think he's a coach as well. I think coaching is somewhat an employment. It's not work. I don't know if it's related to workplace, but I feel like it's related to workplace racism. And I'm very interested. I don't know how many people are retired. I think he's the only, I don't know, like the people that call in who are retired. I would, I haven't listened to every, you know, workplace racism program, but I would really be interested in his retirement experience, especially as it pertains to finances. Is he getting his monies on time? Is he experienced issues in terms of getting his money on time? How are people, you know, reacting to him in terms of his retirement at his volunteering and current employment in the DCS program and as a coach? Thank you for allowing me to share.
Wowee. Much obliged. The Black African, thank you so much for the commentary. I guess a great suggestion for the no touching. I think that is brilliant in terms of the arranging that you did with the furniture, not your furniture, the furniture that you are allowed to use, changing it and the way that your cubicle is positioned. I think we stated regularly, you are under surveillance in the workplace and the entirety of the system, and that you're not going to have any privacy, cubicle, office, whatever your work situation is. And they're going to be rifling through your things and all of that. We talked about that on a regular basis. But to say this, oh, okay, people are just coming in and the way that they function in your office, I'll put this chair here and notice how that switches their behavior. They come in and now they, boop, sit down. They're not just going through. They come and they sit. That is spectacular. And I would say other people, see if there are things that you can do, because we have a lot of people who talked about environments where people are coming in and sneaking up on them or these different types of things, practicing racism, where just if you can reconfigure some of your office furniture and what have you, not your, the office furniture, then that is so important. Not using that possessive adjective with the furniture because of the disclaimer. Sometimes racists don't allow you to move their furniture and they will tell you so. So I've been in work environments where they say explicitly, do not move the furniture, any of it. Or if you do move it, they'll go, oh, wait a minute. We can't have, you know, random Negroes deciding where their desk is going to be. You have to put that back. So if you are allowed to reconfigure things, that might be great, particularly for because we've had a number of folks down through the years who've said that that seems to be one of the best or one of the favorite office pastimes is sneaking up on Black people. So if you can move your desk around so that now you can see when people are coming in, woohoo. Retired firefighter, did you want to respond to some of his questions about how you were able to get to retirement and, you know, what, I guess, sort of things allowed you to get there? Tips? Are you getting your money, pension, and what have you on time?
I'll try. I would say probably the number one antidote for me getting through the process of getting hired to going through training through in full employment to retirement was myself having a level of codification very early in the workplace. I developed or shifted that that codification to counter-racist codification very early, and it was that was kind of like by chance when it came down to it, as far as putting on exactly counter-racist codification, and I'm talking about on the job itself. It's not like I'm coming in the middle of the fire station shouting Black Power or something like that, but from the standpoint of myself conducting my codification and being aware of the greatest obstacle in employment that would be a part of you getting fired or mistreated in some sort of way, to be able to recognize that, I was able to come across that early. And then I met Mr. Fuller personally, met him over to Mr. Clark's house. And if any of the listeners wanted to know on who Mr. Clark was, he was a guest on the program, and you can hear the archives of Mr. Clark on the program with Gus interviewing him. Myself and Mr. Clark and another gentleman, we met very early on my time on the fire department. I think within the first 3 or 4 years, we met based on his counter-racist codified code, you know, based on how that's applied as an individual. We met from the standpoint of was on a what they call a march, and in turn, not so much the march is how we met. That brought us into the same environment, but from a particular means that white people do sometimes with they will politically be nice to you for political reasons. And in this particular case, the white person came out to the area where we were marching, meaning the black firefighters were marching in protest of the union, and asked, "Hey guys, we understand it's hot out here. Anybody wants to come in and get some coffee and donuts, you're invited to come on in." And everybody, all of the non-white black people that was out there marching, all of a sudden went in to get the coffee and donuts, except for us three. And we've been in contact with one another almost on a weekly basis since the 1980s. We have conducted counter-racist activity on the job as well as off duty. It was able to be able to accomplish that based on our conscious counter-racist planning and thought process. The fire department as a business is, I would say, I keep saying, kind of unique in a sense. Most people on their job, they spend the time on their job daily, normally from something like 7 or 8 in the morning until the early evening. Well, with the fire department, you live with other people for 24 hours. And within that, in that environment, you have all of the instances of what you would have in a house: television, Bible, all kinds of books, even pornographic material. You would have it would encourage conversation. It would of all types, you know. If I haven't mentioned television, I watched the age of from just three channels to the type of television programs that come on today. You know, I've witnessed that so-called process. I don't know if it's progress or not, but process. So all of that encourages conversation. So therefore, that atmosphere is there. I was able to follow a code, you know, as far as knowing and understanding the rules. I didn't like the idea of someone telling me on a particular rule on what I'm not practicing or whatever, or what I could practice. I studied it and learned it myself because I didn't like the idea, especially a white person. It would be tolerable if it was a non-white black person, but a white person, it just disgusted me for a white person to be able to tell me anything. And so therefore there was some sort of layers in between myself and that white person who wanted to harm me in some sort of way, because the environment created that, well, due process was something that was that we actually as individuals kind of like utilized, that sort of thing. And apparently during that 20 to 28 years, they were not willing to mistreat me. And there are 10 or 15 other people who are doing the same things. And not getting any opposition at all. Myself and those two other gentlemen and some other co-workers, as well as people in the quote unquote black community, would be doing things off duty visibly and corresponding with the television as well as newspaper. And it would be, of course, the newspaper would be thrown at the fire station too, and they would read about it, with Mr. Clark being our spokesperson. And so that's something they just would have to deal with. But the good thing about it is that before I even arrived at a fire station, they already knew on who they were dealing with. You know, and I, in turn, always had a plan. You know, for that. That's the only reason why my friend William Clark was able to last as long as he did to retirement, because of the incident that Gus knows about that involved after September 11th. That's the only reason why he was able to get through that process and not get fired. That, and also with the fire chief at the time, which was Charles Phillips. You have to listen to it. I'm not going to really go through it because it's kind of like long, but you have to listen to the archives to get an understanding of that. But from retirement, what I strongly suggest that a non-white person does immediately upon being hired: have a plan, or develop a plan of retirement when it comes to what that particular job offers as far as retirement or savings, that sort of thing. Take advantage of it. In some cases, there's some jobs that actually have a situation to where you can have money taken out for your offspring to go to college. You know, that sort of thing. It depends on the job, but all of them at some level, well, most of them anyway, have some level of retirement itself, as far as I'm trying to think of a word. I can't even think of a word right now. What it's called when you get money? Pension. Yes. You know, simple word like that, I'd be forgetting. But anyway, pension, as far as pension wise, and do it early. Do it early. Most young people mess up on a job because they do not plan in the future. And the greatest weapon that's used against young black people in employment is debt. Is debt, personal debt. It directly has something to do with racism, white supremacy, as far as your mistreatment, what you're going to get out of it if you don't become conscious of it early. And I would say in that particular department, I was kind of like fortunate from the standpoint to whereas it was right there in my face all of the time. Because like I said before, this is another reason why that particular job, for the most part in this part of the world, is one that is denied of non-white black people because of the perks that it entails so much. But anyway, I was able to take advantage of, because I even before I was on the job, I never had a elaborate spending type of culture, you know, for myself personally. The only time I go places is whereas I have to have a reason for going someplace as far as traveling, not to be going somewhere just to be able to brag to somebody and say, well, I went there, you know, that sort of thing. I don't shop. When I go to a store, I specifically know what I'm going there for, and I get it and leave. And I've always been like that. The whole idea about walking around different places all day long for 7-8 hours at a mall, it just never was my interest at all. The monetary issue is very important. Unfortunately, that is one of the main attributes that the racists use to make a lot of us suffer. And like I said, debt is one of the major pitfalls that affects non-white people, especially non-white black people in employment. Because even the word retirement, somebody just asked me, I get asked that all the time, how are you doing with retirement? And I define retirement when you're not breathing. That's really how I define it, when you stop breathing, as far as that concerned. But when it comes to the other activities, such as coaching, all of that came almost at the same time as far as from a professional standpoint. But the coaching never was something that I was compensated with enough money to whereas that was something that determined on whether or not I had a house or something like that. It never was in terms of money. I did it because that's something that I always loved to do. And then very, very quickly from being employed in that way, I used it as a platform. I've always had it in mind. I always thought that when you are a quote unquote adult and you have immediate contact with young people, that with that activity that you may be on, that you should also utilize that atmosphere to be able to share with them something else other than the immediate reasoning for why y'all in each other's company, you know. Although in order to be successful in sports or football, you have to spend some sort of time with that subject. But it's a lot less of time that you need to have with that than what is talked about. I was fortunate to come in contact with a black male who did it for a living. His name was William Billy Rowe. And That was early in my coaching career. Well, not so much early, probably after about 10 years. And he was permissible enough to allow me to do what I do in my contact with primarily young black males. I would say during my career in coaching, I probably coached on teams about 95% of the players in that entire time from 1981 up until present were non-white black males. We had a formula that we utilized was, I would say, quite successful. I didn't coach this past year because he actually got hired to the college level, Florida A&M to be exact, his alma mater. But we have been quite successful with a basic strategy as far as the game itself, the fundamentals on how to do this, how to do that, as far as football is concerned, and a basic strategy in the three elements of the game itself. And then for the most part, you're dealing with them as younger black males. And from that contact that you have with them, you allow them to see you at your best as you making mistakes, that sort of thing. And in turn, that relationship conjures up a situation where you do the best you can for them and they do their best. And you end up winning. You know, you end up winning as far as games and even more that goes along with that. You know, I get contact with black males who I coached 25, 30 years ago. I mean, I can't possibly remember everybody by name, but I can tell on who they are based on how they address me from the start. And they mentioned about, you know, how my contact with them and how it assisted them through their individual pathways. So there's always something to do. I put it that way. It's always something to do. And just a matter of you, you know, having that level of interest, you know. Hopefully I answer somewhat of the question. I don't want to take up the program, but if anything else that I can enter in, you know, just ask.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Context of white supremacy, always grand to hear it emphasized about trying to be frugal in the system of white supremacy. Not splurging, saving, not going out and shopping and buying things that are unnecessary and things that we don't need, kind of having that as a lifetime frame of reference as long as the system of white supremacy exists. I think that is brilliant. I did check the term pornography is in the word guide. Mr. Fuller says, avoid using this word when others use it. Ask for a detailed explanation that you can easily understand for the word pornography. Always nice to include a tidbit from the word guide. Great question, again, or recommendation, query. Yeah, it was a question, series of questions that Black African in requesting information. If we have other listeners, Black people, victims of racism, if you have retired, if you have any helpful tidbits for other victims of racism that you think would help them have an easier time getting to retirement and things that, you know, you wish you had known when you were still 30 or 25 or even 40, hey, share. I was just telling a victim of racism for this week, a victim of racism, that in the workplace, we should make it a priority to learn as much constructive information as possible. That is one of the things that racists do: withhold constructive, helpful information. So a workplace, that is an environment where you can learn a lot. Try to learn as much constructive info as possible. Ask questions, be mindful, be alert, pay attention to what's happening around. Learn. Be as curious as possible in the workplace about constructive things. White people generally are regular reservoirs, or racists are often reservoirs of information. That is the system of racism, white supremacy. Let's see. I'll check. See if other folks. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you have commentary questions. I don't know if B in Toronto, I don't know, but Kizzy's cousin, she wanted to thank you for your commentary. I read her report earlier. Let's see. In fact, thanks to B in Toronto and Irie for the book suggestions. I have purchased them both. There you go.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, the program has been a great wealth of resources to turn to as well. A lot of the books, such as The Man Not, Delectable Negro, books that I wouldn't have even known about, I've gotten from this show. So in turn, thank you, Gus, and the callers and listeners as well for making book suggestions and doing the book club series. Because it's very insightful, and it's helped provide strategies on how to deal with countering racism, especially with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr.'s book with the compensatory. I have the book right here, Compensatory County Racist Code, the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. So it's very insightful.
Look here, B. Before we're gonna certainly, I'm looking forward to hearing your commentary. I don't know if you were with us at the beginning. I was commenting about your beloved Raptors, might be world champion Raptors. This is workplace racism. I said, what happened? I don't know if you even paid attention to all that, but what happened with Kyle Lowry? Because I think before, when I started the program, I said your cousin Drake. There's been lots of commentary where people, white people and non-white people, have been publicly suggesting violence, encouraging violence against Drake because he's been cheering for the Raptors. And I said it's workplace racism because he is paid by the Raptors. He is a brand ambassador for them to do exactly that, to cheer for the team. So it's workplace and it's just, it's flagrant terrorism because it's encouraging violence, terrorism against black people, even though he has a white parent. So I had said all that before. Now, the incident that happened this week with Kyle Lowry, where the co-owner of the Golden State Warriors, Mark Stevens, suspected racist, he shoved Kyle Lowry when Mr. Lowry, he went in the stands after a basketball. This was on camera. The league fined him $500,000 and banned him from basketball games for the rest of the finals and for a year. He's not allowed to attend games. Kyle Lowry had said that he wanted him banned for life. And there were quite a few other people who, other folks who said that they thought he should have been banned for life and would have been if he were not billionaire white man, co-owner of the team. And I said, all of this is workplace racism and it's violence against black people in the workplace. And this was out, God forbid, on a public stage right in front of a camera. I mean, he didn't do any. This was totally unprovoked. He shoved him and cursed at him. You're right there in Toronto. Has this been presented as not just it's workplace racism? Have you heard people discuss this in that frame?
I haven't followed, and I have my own personal reasons as to why I don't follow any sort of sports, and particularly basketball as well. You know, unfortunately, I look at it as it's like a gambling racket that only the white coaches and the white owners seem to win at, whereas black young men, ambassadors, players, athletes, are the ones that are getting injured and running up and down the plantation to throw a ball into a basket and not really reaping the benefits. And it's often short-term employment with high risk of injury. So I don't really follow basketball that much, but I'm not surprised. I haven't heard anything about the incident. So far, all that I've been hearing is, you know, the Raptors better win. They better, you know, represent Toronto. And it's like, oh, well, you know, sure, Raptors may win, but, you know, any small detail, anything should go wrong. And it's, oh, look at these blacks, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. I mean, because that incident was publicized, I mean, there shouldn't be a discussion. Rightly so, the person who committed a violent act on television should be banned. I mean, that would be the appropriate thing to do. But again, this is the context of white supremacy. Asking for the basics of appropriateness and respect is, you know, something that they're simply not willing to do. So I hope that's my answer to that situation.
Bravo! That's such a outstanding and like. Dr. Welsing would be proud. That is black self-respect at its finest. Your stance on refraining from consuming any of the ball games. Bravo. But yeah, I was even thinking, file a police report. Anyone, if anyone listening has contact with Mr. Lowry, if Mr. Lowry should hear the broadcast, file a police report. I was assaulted. Like, forget the, I mean, the NBA, oh yeah, he should be lifetime banned and all that, but I mean, hey, they practice racism. What can you do? Donald Sterling was in their club forever. File a police report. That is assault. If we were just out walking down the streets of Oakland, out at Lake Merritt, and a white man or anyone shoved you, boop, boop, call the police. File a police report. That would be the suggestion. You called in to talk about things not related to Drake or the finals. Be in Toronto.
Yes, thank you so much, Gus. In fact, I called in to make a report on the relatively new job that I'm currently in, or the new plantation. Just seeing the same old terrorism. This one, of course, is per usual that I've been finding, often perpetuated by white women. So what's happening is that in the department that I'm in, they're not subjected to changes due to funding. But in another area where there's a couple of non-black, non-white women, one is non-black, non-white, and one is white. They are in another department where they're subject to changes. And as a result, they've been focusing on how successful I'm doing my work. I've been getting funding for different families to help with a variety of activities for the summertime and beyond. And, you know, these two particular women do not seem to feel that I should be having such success, and they've been doing their retaliatory tactics, such as the malicious gossiping, smear campaigns. Last week during the compensatory call-in, I had mentioned about if you have an opportunity to move desks, to do so. Because the place where I'm currently at, the desk isn't assigned. So what I had noticed was these two women who were gathering up their support were doing a boxing in technique where they sit around as if they are surrounding you. So, and then while they're during that 7-hour work period, you know, they're making passing comments, passing negative comments within earshot, again, to try and chip away at confidence. So what I did was I just removed myself out of that toxic situation, and, you know, just in my mind had that place under quarantine, which is just keep away from these toxic people. And I've been moving around to different seats as well to also prevent from them trying to figure out where I'm going to be to continue the toxic behavior. They would literally have to be walking around the office in order to find where I'm located. And that's what I've noticed they've actually been doing, is walking around the office to find out where I'm located. But they'll try to make it seem as if they're, you know, just casually passing by. When I know in the past, from looking at their patterns, they did not used to do that. Even on my commute into work, I've noticed there's been one or two that would happen to be behind my car as I'm driving into work. And I would literally be taking different routes. Only to, when I come in, be asked about, oh, well, I was right behind you, and, you know, I noticed that you've left all of a sudden, and it's very uncomfortable. I find very intrusive. You know, which route I take before I go to work is none of their business. What I do outside of work, none of their business. Where I sit in the workplace is none of their business, but I know that this is all a part of their terroristic tactics. And I just wanted to remind folks that, you know, the things that whites and non-white, non-black, and sometimes non-white and black persons do, who are to some degree upholding white supremacy, is they will, you know, victims of white supremacy, rather, would join in and you know, join in on these tactics. And, you know, sometimes you'll be wondering, well, you know, am I seeing things? Trust your judgment. Trust your judgment. Try to keep yourself away from the situation as much as possible. The book for the Counter Racist Code by Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. has been helping tremendously. I've just been reducing to very low contact and making the conversations as constructive as possible and not talking when it's not constructive and just focusing on my work. So on the other side, I can hear within earshot them spreading rumors. At one point, they were claiming that I might even have mental health issues because I'm not around them anymore, or somehow I don't want to work with them anymore, or somehow, you know, I don't seem to like them because I don't go to lunch with them anymore. And it's not as if it was a regular thing to go to lunch with them. So I know that they are just finding different ways to try to get a reaction. And again, the main thing is to remain calm, keep yourself focused. What I've been doing to help improve resiliency and to improve my focus is reaching work at least 10 minutes before I start. And there's a health room, and I'll go into the health room and I'll put on a guided meditation series to start the day. And then I will select the new seat that I'll be working at for that day. And I just focus. And I do say good morning. And when I leave, I do say good night. And if I don't have a question for them, then I don't bother. Even though I know they've been nasty and offensive and recruiting other terrorists by proxy onto their gossip team, I just go in and I'm polite as possible. I still share resources and I go, oh, have you seen such and such? So that, because I know that the rest of the office is listening, right? They're listening to how is the in Toronto reacting to this, because I'm sure that they're, like, it's an open space. It's not as if people cannot see what's going on or hear what's going on. So I'm very calculated in what I say, and I do what I can with, you know, given a compliment, so no one can ever say, oh, I've heard the in Toronto say such and such about so-and-so. In this case, all that could be said is, oh, well, the in Toronto have said resources that helps the team. The in Toronto has only said things that have been supportive to maintain group cohesion. So that's the main thing that I would advise. Is if anyone is currently being mistreated through terroristic ways of persons who clearly have insecurities and clearly are dedicated, and I guess in the callers and listeners, I really do say dedicated, because when I would come in, the ringleader, Without a doubt, within the first, I've actually timed this, within the first 5 minutes of interaction with the other coworkers, and I'm on the other side and I'm hearing this within earshot, within the first 5 minutes of interacting with coworkers, she will start something with, well, you know, isn't it amazing how, you know, Be In Toronto, she'll use my name, Be In Toronto is doing such and such and such, just, you know, chipping away again. So again, I don't see anything. I just keep my ears very open. I'm documenting, so they don't know that I'm documenting this. And just follow your gut. Make sure that you do something to maintain calm and focus, whatever that may be in the morning. Check your breathing throughout the day. Make sure that you're doing a body scan, a mental body scan throughout the day to see if you're noticing if there's any tight spots, especially around the chest area. You may be undergoing a panic attack and may not even realize it, especially if you're feeling a tightness around the chest. I've noticed that I was feeling that, and then I've found out ways of how to alleviate that. Going for a walk, maintaining Black self-respect on the job, so that at the end of the day, what happens is when it comes down to the substance of what work has been produced, they will see that there's been so much funding going to the people I work with, whereas the ones who are carrying on, they would have very little to show for it, except for the fact that they've been talking about me throughout the majority of the time. So that's what I would suggest for, is to maintain your composure, do what you need to do, keep focused. Oh, and, just constantly keep your resume up to date, so that at least you'll know that you have options, so whatever training opportunities that you have, free or paid, do as many as possible to keep abreast of what's going on within your industry, as well as, you know, having a healthy set of hobbies to keep your mind distracted. Healthy eating is also very helpful as well. I've been noticing I've been eating a lot more cucumbers and sweet peppers, and that has literally replaced cereals and coffee in the morning. So it's cucumbers and sweet peppers and drinking water, and that has helped tremendously as well too. Thank you, and I leave my line.
Wow, that's awesome. Diet is so important. What we eat has a huge impact. Racists know this, just being very deliberate, very intentional with what you eat. Massive impact on how you think, feel, thought, speech, emotions, the whole gambit, behavior. Even posture, that was mentioned before. You start eating better, drinking more water, it will drastically improve your posture. Racists will note that also. But if you, and that body scan, that is a regular yoga term that certainly can and should be invoked beyond the yoga mat. Doing a body scan while you are at work, just to see exactly as being Toronto stated, are you tight in the chest? Are you speaking quicker? I know sometimes if I'm anxious, nervous, angry, frustrated, I might start speaking more quickly. I think that happens to a number of folks, or speaking more loudly. Are you taking shorter breaths where you can slow your breathing down, take some deep breaths? That's a huge one. Speaking of yoga, taking those breaths, if you're feeling some anxiety, tension, as she said, taking that walk and just do some deep breathing exercises, that can have a huge impact just to calm yourself so that you're not just carrying all that anxiety and tension for the rest of the day from an incident. We had another incident of white women engaging in terrorism against non-whites in the workplace. Standard operating procedure, very important to be mindful. It's not just the man. I've never heard of that as a technique specifically. Boxing, I think, was the way you described it, having the two white women come and sit on either side and, you know, do their attacking and gossiping and all of that. Like, that is, that's why Mr. Fuller has his word guide and what have you, so that you can have terms to accurately convey what's happening. That's boxing. We'll have to see if other people have had that, where you've had white people sitting right on the either side of you. And that way they can, you know, gossip back and forth and chat and make whatever comments if other folks have had to deal with that form of mistreatment in the workplace. Black self-respect, staying calm emotionally, absolutely key. I would also definitely, if possible, be looking at requesting different seating if possible. I know we talked about that before. Racist certainly can make that difficult, but wow, that is, keep the resume up to date. Much obliged for Be in Toronto. Thank you for sharing. If anybody had any tips for dealing with the boxing situation and or hostile white women, folks had any suggestions that might be helpful for Be in Toronto, any of our other callers, or if you have your own situation, *61, if you are on the line, feel free to share.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I'm going to begin with a few reports I've heard from some other non-white people. The first one is there's a non-white female who was very upset when she came down to the break room, and she was telling me how it was two things that occurred where she was mistreated. She works at a front counter position doing customer service, and the white woman that I guess is the lead worker, she was like, I guess, 15 minutes late or something like that. That was the first thing. And the second one was she apparently was this non-white female was helping out a customer, and she was presented with a situation that she couldn't execute effectively until she had gotten the proper training. So she tried to, on a later date, communicate with this white woman about learning how to do this particular type of transaction. And she was like, oh, you know, I remember showing this to you. And so she was trying to pull up the list of emails where she, I guess, supposedly sent this email out. And she was like, well, let me see if I can find when I sent it out to you. And she said, the non-white female said that they were both looking at the screen and she didn't find where her name was on it. So a tremendous amount of arrogance was there from the white woman, of course, where she never did send out the email reminder of this particular task that she was supposed to get trained on. So I classify that as an act of racism. She didn't want to admit that she hadn't informed the non-white female about this task. The next one is, there was an incident with a black female in the break room, the upstairs break room, where the clique, so to speak, the prison clique, that's the metaphor of white women, was present in the break room. And some, like, an exchange occurred where the black female was saying she forgot her fork or eating utensil to engage in eating her meal. And a white woman that's in the clique said, well, why don't you use your hands? And the head prison guard female of the clique was like, uh-oh. She says, uh-oh, because she knows that this is a somewhat of a less confused victim, and she will ask questions. So she said, well, do you use your hands? That was the response she got. So she didn't, the white woman didn't respond. So shortly after that, she ended up leaving. But obviously another act of racism. My third one is, there was a customer that came in to the area today, and I was looking at his shirt, and it was a Florida symbol of the state of Florida, and inside of the state it was a Confederate flag, and on top of it it said Cracker Life. Now, you know, you can just envision that. It was a white t-shirt and the letters were black. It said Cracker Life and the Florida state symbol beneath it. So obviously this is a blatant shirt racist. And this person was allowed to come into the courthouse. So he was to the coworker of my white woman. My next one is, we've been having to do this project, as I've shared before. And I think I was definitely being set up to be attacked with this one, but I was able to somewhat use it to my advantage, I can say, to where I'm doing the work and I've done like 18 films, and the other two co-workers, they've only done like two or three of them. So I've documented every time that I've done one. And the white female and the black female, those are the other two co-workers. And the white female was able to slack and was admittedly slacking, said she was slacking. And they allowed her to get away with that. So I knew that something of that nature was going to occur. So every time I finished the sheet, I emailed it to myself. All right. So it's showing the date and the time of it. So over the course of like 3 months, I've done like 18 films for this little imaging project. So I guess just recently they've had a chat with this person, but I think my theory is that a white woman, I guess, told on her, and all of a sudden she was confronted for her lack of productivity, because not only was she not doing work on that, but she wasn't helping the white people doing the other tasks that kept her from doing the tasks she's supposed to help us out with. So every time they would say, oh, well, can I take your batch? And she would be like, oh, well, you know, I'm doing this. Could you please do it for me? And then I've seen this on a numerous of occasions. So they either would take the batch and do it, or they'll just kind of walk away in frustration and not say nothing. So I guess the metaphor had finally caught up to her or whatever. And I think they thinking that I'm going to use that, which I am at a certain point in time, but I still know how to do the project in a certain way that they haven't figured it out yet. So, my next one is, there was an incident that I noticed in the meeting, because I spoke about it the previous month, about how they took a segment out that if they want anybody to say anything. So what they did this time was they employed a strategy where they did a lot of extensive speaking, and they allow other people to speak. So they went over the normal 15-minute range, so it went almost to 20 minutes. So the last lady that spoke, she was like, oh, well, it looks like we're running out of time. And she said something nonsensical like, well, you know, I was just doing some research, and it appears that the more you learn here at work, the happier you are. So just something just totally random, like it had nothing to do with anything they were discussing. Yeah, it was something about work, but it just seems like it's more filler type information that's keeping us immature. I think that's the way I've concluded. It's definitely like functional immaturity, I would say. My last one is, I had an incident with the warden, I suspect, once again, because she wasn't making eye contact, so I could suspect she was up to more nefarious type of plans or whatever. So now I know we discussed drinking water. I get at least 100 and something ounces. So that's like my reputation in the office. Like he encouraged people to drink water. We know he's going to drink water today. So now, just for a couple of weeks, it was okay for me to keep the water bottle in the refrigerator. So I have this Essentia, that brand of water bottle, and I would just put water into it. So now at the meeting, I come into the break room, and I was going to exchange a newer water bottle, well, the older one for a newer one. And both of them were on the ground, like they were sitting on the floor. All right, like you can just envision that. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, so I pick them up and I say, do you know who put these on the floor? As the white female coworker, she's like, oh, no, nah, you know, I did see that on the floor. That looks pretty rude. Like, you know, why? Like, WTF, she said, you know, what the F? That's what she said. So the supervisor comes in, and I said, my bottles were placed on the floor. Like, would you happen to know who did that? She said, no, and I will inquire about it. But she ended up finding out, and it was the usual suspect. Now, the thing that's interesting about this was that she left for the rest of the day. So my thing is, she knew who that belonged to, because no one else's items were placed on the ground ever. Like, you could have put that on the table or anything, like, but to put it on the floor, just standing up on the ground, like, that's just extremely racist. And she said, I guess she had texted the warden, and I guess pretty much it ended up being her. So I requested to speak to the top, you know, the top boss clerk. And you should have saw, like, the fear, like, on her facial expression, because she knew I was serious. And she was basically, you know, having a racism show, like, oh, you know, it's just it's just some empty bottles or whatever. But I'm like, but nobody else had that item placed on the floor as well. Like, have you ever seen that? Is this a normal occurrence here? Does this happen to everyone? And she was like, oh, well, no, I haven't seen that. So I'll rest my case. And I said, remember when I said that you all don't care about me? Most of the people here don't care. That's Exhibit A. Like, you don't care about me, my grandma, my dad, and my mom, nothing like that. Like, so that's more evidence right there. So we end up going into the to talk to the clerk. And he asked me, how did I feel? He kept using that word feel. And I said, well, it's more so predicated on logic, like not really the emotions of it. I'm like, is this something that's correct? Is this supposed to be happening to me as an employee, especially with a person who has that pattern and history of abuse mistreating me? And I even use the word molestation. So I say, yeah, when I come in here, I don't expect to get correct treatment, but I'm trying to get it to a point to where we have justice. And I think he was correct in how he was speaking, but for some reason, the supervisor, black manager, and the other racist white man who had to look up the word fair, they all came in there. So I'm like, why are all these people in here? Somebody must be guilty of something. So I was like, yeah, I'm a black male, and we don't really have many black males here. So I have to be very careful, and I'm still getting mistreated. And we agreed that I just hit my 8 years. And he has never gotten any reports. He's always heard good things about me. So he just finds it interesting that these things are just happening to me. So I said, you know, yeah, I'm thinking like this is incorrect. So, you know, hopefully something can be done about this. So he was asking, he asked, how did I feel? I said, I felt, just disregarded and mistreated. And I'm looked at as a thug, criminal, and an animal, okay? And he says, well, you know, I don't look at you that way, and hopefully we can get those things changed. Like, what do you recommend that I can do to help make things better? I said, try to encourage people to come share these reports with you. And now, you know, many of them may be afraid because they could face retaliation. And, you know, and I'm looking in the eye of the white people, and the black female just sitting there uncomfortable, the white man, other ones uncomfortable. And, you know, it just is what it is. And I just had to be quite frank and truthful with them. And I didn't really get too much response. They were just quiet. And I guess they're just going to do some investigating from that. And we just walked out. And I'll just hear whatever the update is on that next week. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Well, the PhD course in counter-racism, what white supremacy racism is, how it works, continues in the Florida judicial system. Wow. That is bravo. Kudos for encouraging and drinking all that water, 100 ounces, that is spectacular. I think B said she ditched her coffee in the morning, is doing cucumbers, drinking water. That is bravo. That right there is a huge chunk of racism, white supremacy, countering it, and black self-respect. But I mean, wow. 8-year employee. I've been here almost a decade. 2 different presidential administrations, Governor Scott, Governor, I forgot DeChristie or whatever his name, I forgot, the new regime in Florida.
DeSantis,
yes, Governor DeSantis. I picked him to win and everything. I've been here through all of that. and basic water. You can't even set it to the side. Like, is there no counter space in the kitchen? It had to go on the floor. And then the added tackiness of this was done, and then she bounced for the day. My last task before I go home, I'm going to throw this Negra's water on the floor. And then go home. Like, wow. Like, what? The tackiness of it. And this is at the courthouse, no less. And even the response when the white woman comes in, WTF. That is so wrong, man. They put your water, like, yeah, like the tackiness of at the courthouse. Not that they would be any better if this was at, you know, AT&T or what have you. But I mean, come on. It couldn't just be, you know, hey, Negra, you have lost the privilege of keeping your water in the refrigerator. I hope you like getting your 100 ounces at room temperature. No, we're just going to sit it on the floor and let you figure it out on your own. And I'm going to go home and enjoy the rest of my afternoon. Thank you kindly. Why did you or how did you conclude that with regards to the productivity issue that a white woman snitched on this lazy white woman?
See, we have an older white woman who has, I guess, had a sickly husband, and she's been out for at least a good 3 to 4 weeks. So this all started the 22nd of March. So we just hit June. So that's almost approaching 3 months. So the last 3 or 4 weeks, she's been using that as an excuse to get away from the imaging project to do something called verifying, which is the lady who's been assisting her sickly husband. That's what her job is. But apparently there's somebody working at home, another act of racism, another white woman that was supposedly retired is helping from home to do this task to help keep it caught up. So the context with that is she's been using that as an excuse. So one day last week, she goes back to the lab and there's another white woman back there. So maybe she was under the impression that another white woman wouldn't snitch or tell, but I just heard her say, can I speak to you for a moment? She said that to the white female supervisor. And I was just, I just knew that's what she was going to say, because when you start messing up white people's productivity, like, that's when you really getting in trouble. Like, you can do that over there on the other side with the black people. All right.
That's
and even the black female supervisor. See, so she tried to use that and then say, oh, well, hey, that once again, a double speak, like you, when you bring her something, oh, well, can you do this? And then the person will walk out and she'll say to the black female, oh, well, unless you want to do it, oh, I can do it. It doesn't matter. That's insanity. Controlled insanity. And you can see, and then this is a younger white woman. I mean, way younger. And I'm like, no, you got it. That's it. Three words. You got it. Oh, okay. And she'll walk to the machine and do the request. So she'll say that to them, like, well, you know what? I'm coming to do your batch. Okay, you can go ahead and do it. So they allowed that behavior to fester until it started affecting them. See, because she normally works over where we are, you see? So now they done realize, okay, he has documented all of these films, but see, they don't realize that I write with my left hand. So she writes with her right hand. So it takes her a longer time to do it, but I'm not going to tell them that, like, cause they tried to do harm to me, you know? So white person, they have to do the work. See, like, what I mean by that is, like, the tool with that she has to write with, she's using her right hand in the pen and use the machine. You see, so I just stick the paper up under the keyboard, so the weight of the keyboard stays on the sheet and I'm able to get it done faster, and nobody pointed it out yet.
I see. I see. You codified a system so you can be more efficient with doing the films. And you are not going to assist them so that they can become more productive. They'll just have to labor through it and do it the longer, tedious one. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Bravo. Bravo. Wow. That is, and I'm glad I asked the follow-up question about how you came to I ran out of water. He got his 100 and I ran. I had my water bottle and neglected to refill it before we started. The lazy suspected racist who was in the department with a black female supervisor, it seems that, and I've, my tagline for a decade, white women, white children, white men cannot be ignorant about racism. This lazy white woman, hey, you got a black supervisor? You can be lazy. Loaf all you want. Do one film in 5 months. No big deal. You go to a department with a white supervisor, whoa, you cannot do all that loafing around over here. Now, if you got that Negro over there, and it'll probably be, oh, yeah, we do note that there is a productivity problem, but it's not this white woman's. It's going to be the black female supervisor. It's going to be your fault that you can't control your workers, and this is on you. Oh, we were thinking about getting you that next promotion, but I don't know. Look at how many films. Yeah, look at that. These numbers are abysmal. Everybody in the department is doing a terrible job. Now, you got one person who has done like 50 of them, but hey, this is abysmal, and you are going to have to do better. So we're going to hold off on that. We'll put you on probation for another 6 months, and that's what it'll be. She goes to the white department, and immediately we're going to have a conversation right now to get this resolved. That right there, you cannot be ignorant about racism, white supremacy. And I suspect that that lazy white woman, I don't know how old she is, but I suspect that she will probably refine her racist code in the future about her laziness and how productive she is. That languaging, well, unless you want to do it, it doesn't matter. That is so common in the system, and I think that is deliberately taking advantage. Whites know the power dynamic. They know that for a lot of victims of racism, we think, hey, racism, I'm fortunate to even have got an interview for this job. They could have seen my name on the application, and oh, that nigger's not getting a job here. That senior zip code, that nigger's not getting a job here. I'll do the extra work. I'll do the extra assignment. Maybe, you know, they'll give me a raise. Maybe, you know, I'll show them I'm loyal. I'll show them I'm committed. They know a lot of victims. That's totally taken advantage of, no, this assignment was given to you. This was not something that anybody up for grabs. Anybody went, this was your assignment. Stop being lazy and do your work. And that's another one of those situations where it's great if you can have that emotional control. You got it. You don't need to jump up and down. Yell, scream, wag your finger. And you got it. Thank you kindly. You don't even need to add that. Just go back to your work. As few words as possible. Cranking things out on your own. I thought that was so important. The first anecdote involving the other victim where she didn't get training. And it seems that a white person may have deliberately omitted an email about the training. I think we have mentioned frequently for years that right there is one of the critical and most common aspects of workplace racism, where non-white people do not use often and try as best you can with those emails. A lot of time, that's how you can end up finding that it seems like that's what ended up leading the trail here, that there was a lack of communication via email, that, oh, there was additional training. Let's see. The water, talked about that one. Let's see. I think I had one more, but we are at the 3 hour mark. Make sure you are keeping a record if you are on your job of what is taking place. Oh, I got to make sure I say something with the black female who is more codified. That sort of comment where she asked for silverware and the white woman racist said you could use your hands. In my view, that's act of racism. And that's another one. When I was more confused, that's the type of thing that I would say, what are you talking about? This Gus guy is as crazy as hell. You can take him and Al Sharpton and get on out of here. That's what I would have said. To sit here and tell me that something like that is right. She was joking around. What do you mean that's racist that she said use your... You all are just sensitive and you all are crazy. That's what I would have said when I was more confused. And that happened to me. I was at... it was a victim of racism. Invited us to a barbecue here in lovely Seattle. It was summertime. The cows did not exist. We went to the party, barbecue. We're sitting outside, and they had like a bottle of sparkling cider, and everyone has a glass. They pour out some, so it's like one serving left. And so they pour into one glass, pour in another. It's one serving left. They have the bottle. And I said, oh, do you want some? I said, oh, I don't have a cup. And they said, oh, you could just drink it straight out of the bottle. And I was like, no, thank you. And so another victim comes over and he says, are you all right? Has racism been practiced against you? He's more codified. And I said, my response was, I don't think so, but I am a victim. So it could have happened and I've been confused. And they said, oh, someone said that racism was practiced against you. And I said, oh, what happened? And they said, well, did someone offer you a drink with no glass? And I said, yeah, that did happen. He said, oh, yeah, that's definitely an act of racism. They wouldn't have done that to a white person. Like, what are you, a savage? Like, this is a $1 million house. Like, they have glasses galore. Like, what the hell? We're not drinking directly out of a bottle. Any of that type of conduct, eat with your hands, any of that, you clear the room out. And we move on about our business. Like, you don't need to yell. You can stay in the question lane, even when they are tacky, and get the same result. Totally clear the room out and go on about your day. Stay in the question lane as often as possible. You can have lots of constructive results just asking questions. Much obliged. Caller in Florida, man, the courthouse abounds with lessons. if you all have suggestions or other thoughts, you can drop an email. I will investigate the VOPLON and see if there is an issue, or at least if it works for me, and then I can report back tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has happened over the last 7 days. Much obliged to everyone who tuned in. I hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Let's do all that we can to remain in counter-racist codified mode at all times so that we are aware we are in danger. Might need to save ourselves at any moment. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger, or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.